Hello everyone and welcome to this week's sportscommunity.com.au podcast featuring the latest and greatest in the news from the world of grassroots sports. We have some fantastic guests lined up for you this week as well as some great content for your listening pleasure. And as always, I have got my partner in crime with me, Mr. Steve Pallas, the Managing Director of Sports Community. Welcome to the show.
G'day Joe, it's good to be here. How are you going?
Yes, I'm going very well, thanks, mate. I suppose we need to start proceedings this week on a little bit of a somber note with a little bit of reflection on the passing of a wonderful young man who's touched us in so many ways. His death has been felt widely, and many people in the community who don't even have a connection to cricket have felt the passing of Philip Hughes. It's just been an amazing outpouring of national grief, hasn't it, mate?
Yeah, it has, and I think it's to do with the unexpected nature of what happened being hit by a cricket ball, because in sport, quite often people die, and it hasn't had this level of outcry and public involvement, Joe, and just thinking back just on the last 12 months, just from the couple of things that spring to my mind with sport, I mean, there's been at least two jockeys being killed as part of their sport, and only a couple of weeks ago a driver of a speedboat that was competing in a speed race. Motorboat race with skiers tragically passed away as well. But I guess we seem to accept a level of danger in those sports, and so when someone is injured in those sports, we accept that a lot more readily. And it's interesting that there's been such a strong outpouring of amazement, I guess, that about an incident where someone's been hit by a cricket ball, and that's had catastrophic effect like it has with Phil Hughes, and it's really interesting, and it's really touched everybody from around the country. And we've seen on Facebook and Twitter, you know, Hugh Jackman putting out a cricket bat. I mean, the hashtag put out your bat. We have a bat in the front window of our office, Joe. Hadn't seen a light of day for a little while, but you know, Tim Cale, Elton John stopping concerts. You know, it's certainly transcended, but it's had significant effects. I was just looking at, as we were preparing for the show this morning, I was just looking at my own Facebook page, and there's a post from a tearaway fast bowler who certainly does use aggressive bowling as part of his armory and his arsenal, and he put a post up today. Would love to get the view of other cricketers out there on now the status of the bouncer. I bowled one on the weekend and hit a helmet. What are your views? Are you still expecting them as a bouncer, as a batsman, or as bowlers? Are you still going to bowl them? Just curious. And it's had a really interesting and diverse group of responses. And it was interesting, after the weekend's cricket, I also jumped on Facebook and Twitter, and in our local A grade competition, I saw posts from two batsmen that played in games, A grade games on the weekend, who said that one game didn't have a bouncer and another game had one half-hearted bouncer, whereas typically you would have had 20, 30, maybe 40 of those bowled in a weekend. So it's had some significant ramifications, not just at the top end of cricket with the players that played with Phil Hughes, but I think even at the community level, we're now trying to understand the role of the bouncer and intimidatory bowling. And I guess in one regard, we're all looking a little bit differently at how the role of intimidation in cricket, I guess, and that sort of aggressive bowling, which has no doubt been aimed at, in some instances, hurting bowlers and hurting batsmen. Sorry, but you know, in this instance with Phil Hughes, it actually didn't look like that was the case either. It looked like a relatively pedestrian sort of ball that's had catastrophic effects. But it's been interesting watching the ripple effect and the way that social media has helped people share the grief and become involved in that grieving process, Joe.
Yeah, well, what interests me is not just the reaction of the cricket community, but the wider community. I mean, my mum, who's never played cricket and hasn't been that close to cricket, shed a tear when this happened. And I think that Philip Hughes represented a cultural identity, and he represented a lifestyle. He was a boy from the bush who was understated and extraordinarily talented. He was everything that's good about Australia, and he also played a sport that is indelibly etched into our psyche. We play it as kids. We play it with I played it with my brother in the front yard, and
Australia's favourite pastime.
Yeah, we banged the garages and knocked mum's roses over and did all of those kind of things. And I think that someone dying in this sport that is part of our cultural psyche is part of the reason why we've all felt it so deeply, and not just the people who play the sport, but the people that have been associated, even if it's a very tenuous association, you know, someone who's had kids play in the backyard, for example, like my mum. So it's been extraordinary, and our condolences to the family from everybody in the grassroots sports community, and from sportscommunity.com.au. We certainly, I'm not ashamed to say that I shed a tear myself. I couldn't understand why I was so choked up about it, but it represented my boyhood, my childhood, where I grew up playing cricket with my brother, and here's this kid that died playing cricket. It just really choked me up. And when the ads come out, when Richie Beno was put his voice to those ads, I mean, I sat on the couch and blubbered like a young boy, and that was the effect on me.
Yeah, well, I just did a session at a bowls club in Melbourne, and every scoreboard around the bowls club, Joe, had the number 63 on it. So it's had a far-reaching effect. So we'll our thoughts to Phil Hughes and his family.
Now, Steve, I want to talk about a really exciting development at Sports Community, and that is the development and now the availability of our online training courses and our ebooks. We now have, and I'm very proud to say, we now have two online training courses, one around the use of Facebook at your club, and the second around the use of an email newsletter. And we also have a downloadable ebook around communication tactics for your club. So the use of different tools to help you communicate at your club.
Yeah, social media and communication tactics.
These tools have come about because we've done how many hours of training? We've done 640 odd hours of training. We've delivered,
203 training sessions since July last year.
Predominantly, you have delivered 203. You have. And out of those, out of that body of work, we have had a similar set of questions asked of us nearly every time, which is how to raise funds for your club, how to engage and build your membership, how to get sponsors. And we feel that we can help not only in class, but we've developed these online training courses for people who can't make it to our classroom situation, might be in a remote country town or just can't get there on the night. And they can take these courses that will let them know how to use Facebook and how to use newsletters to do just that.
Yeah, Joe, and the second book should come out. We've seen the come back from the editor this morning. So the second book should be out in the next couple of weeks, which is on sponsorship within sports clubs, which is massive. And what we'll also be able to launch, certainly well and truly before Christmas, will be audiobooks for both of those books as well. And just before you jump in, Joe, both of those books are, you know, they're extensive in their depth. So some are 20, and well, the sponsorship book's kind of closer to 40,000 words. So there's a huge amount of detail in there that relates to making it really easy for sports clubs to get new sponsors or use social media or just to really just achieve your club goals.
Now, this may sound like a little bit of an infomercial, and yes, it is a product that we sell, and it's for $19.95 for each of the online courses and the ebook. But we really strongly believe that using an email newsletter can help you achieve all those strategic objectives: raising your membership, engaging your club community, getting more sponsors, communicating more effectively. All of those things can be used by effectively utilizing an email newsletter. They can also be used by effectively utilizing a tool like Facebook. For an investment of $19.95, the return on that investment to your club may be that your club is able to use those tools to secure funds and improve the way that it goes about its business. So, you know, we strongly urge you to have at least a look at the online courses available. They're on our website at www.sportscommunity.com.au. And if you have any questions, feel free to contact me at joe@sportscommunity.com.au, and I'll do my best to answer them for you. Very easy to purchase, and once you've purchased them, the courses become available to you. They are video-based, so they're easy to follow, and the ebook is downloadable. So basically, once you purchase the ebook, you get a link where you just download the ebook and you can read it straight away. So check those out.
Now, Joe, just before we go to the break and our first guest, which is great guests for today, a call to action we put out a couple of weeks ago where we've had a couple of people respond to our request for ideas for our wife's Christmas present. And we're probably looking for some more ideas for our wife's Christmas present. So you can email us at join the show at sportscommunity.com.au because we need some help.
You're listening to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Steve Pellis and Joe Novella, another Sports Community digital production, courtesy of www.sportscommunity.com.au. Okay, as mentioned at the top of the show, we've got a special guest, a wonderful special guest for you today. His name is Paul Shannon. He is the General Manager of Government and Industry Relations at Life Saving Victoria. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Thanks for having me.
G'day, Paul. It's Steve Pellis. How are you going?
Very well, thank you, Steve.
Now, are you at the wonderful, just having had the pleasure of being at Life Saving Victoria a number of times, are you sitting there looking out over the bay on this beautiful summer's day now, first couple of days of December?
I am literally sitting on the beach. If I took the flooring away, I would be sitting on the sand. So it's certainly a wonderful place to come to work, to be able to look over the blue water and see the ferry chuff off to Tasmania every now and again.
Yes, it's a tremendous facility, Life Saving Victoria, and I've very much enjoyed both being there. I've been looking forward to this interview for weeks and weeks, and probably months and months, Paul, because when we just worked out this morning that we've just finished this last week our 203rd training session around the country in the last 18 months, and one of the big topics all the time is about volunteering and volunteer engagement within clubs and engagement within their sport. And And quite often, one of the questions we're asked is, how do we get people involved in our club like Lifesaving do? And I thought, well, rather than us hypothesise about how Lifesaving do it, we thought we'd get you on and ask the very question. How on earth has it so successfully created that culture where everyone that's a member or a part of the club is contributing to that, to the running of that club?
Yeah, look, it certainly is a phenomenal feat. And when you see how some of these clubs actually run and the amount of input from, you know, the volunteer side of things, it is absolutely amazing. And certainly to run the size programs that we do, there's not a chance we could do it without those volunteers. You know, I think the, you know, one of the key areas in life saving is that nipper area, so that's yes. 6 to 14 years of age. And parents want their kids to do that program because it's literally a bit of a life insurance program for your kids if you're going to be around the beach. So you know, with the Australian culture and how much time you're going to spend around water, I think it's really just that life insurance thing. And to be able to deliver it, unless the parents actually buy into it, it's not going to happen for them because the program literally can't run without the parental involvement. So, you know, while we call it the Nipper program, it really becomes a family program.
Yes.
You know, the club that I'm involved, you know, they run the Nipper program for over a, you know, pretty much a 4-week period, and there's about 550 kids involved in that, and there's no paid person to actually, you know, run it. You know, the back end support from Life Saving Victoria makes it easier, and it's all geared around making it easier and providing the resources. But it actually comes down to the club to deliver the programs. And you know, a lot of clubs like my club at Fairhaven, you cannot enrol into the program unless a parent or an older sibling is prepared to put their hand up to help. And, you know, those helping roles, they range from turning the sausages at the end of the show through to conducting the risk management on the beach before they start for the day. It might be providing the correct safety water ratio. It might be an age group manager overseeing a group. But unless there's those parents involved, the program doesn't run. Then the success is, how do you make it just as fun for the parents as you do for the kids? Because if you make it fun for the parents and enjoyable for the parents, then they're going to bring the kids and, you know, they'll come back year after year. So while at those initial first days of nippers, if you like, are geared around the kids getting to know each other, we really concentrate on making sure the parents get to know each other. And, you know, we've sort of looked at the success at our club and said, you know, if the parents can find someone like-minded, and everyone's really down there is like-minded because they, you know, they want their kids involved in the outdoor and a healthy sort of active sport. So they can find someone like-minded. They can meet them for a social get-together at the end of the day. If the kids are going over and having sleepovers at their new friends' houses, you know, it's summertime, everyone's down to have fun and make new friends. So while we want the kids to make new friends, we want the parents to make new friends and create enough social interaction amongst the parents and then really work on that, bringing them into the club and making the parents feel welcome. So, you know, a really thorough induction to stress to parents that this is your club, we want you to be part of it, we want, you know, your kids to actually progress through to a bronze medallion and take up community service and help us patrol the beach. But again, you got to bring it back to that fun element and that social engagement. And we absolutely create communities down there. And it's just, I'll give you the statistics from my club at Fairhaven, is that the local population there between Aries Inlet, Fairhaven, Moggs Creek and Eastern View is roughly around about 1,300 people, permanent population. The club has 1,700 members. So, you know, we've been able to show that the club, be, becomes the community hub. So we have all these tourists come in for the summer with their families, and there's nothing else in the town, really. There's not a lot of... there's no shops or all any of those sorts of things, you know, with regards to parents whiling away some time at a coffee shop or any of those sorts of things. So the club becomes the community.
So, Paul, just for our interstate listeners and international listeners, which they're growing by the day, which kind of surprises us, but Fairhaven's about, what, 200 kilometres out of Melbourne, is it?
Yeah, it's about an hour 45 drive. So.
Yeah. Now, you just reeled off a couple of, well, about three or four key points there.
I get carried away.
I'm
pretty passionate about it.
Which is why we are so, I mean, to us, this is the most powerful topic in all of Australian community sports. So let me just take you back through as you were saying that all that those steps, I was writing them frantically down, and I just want to tackle the very first step that you said. You can't enrol unless a parent or a sibling is prepared to help. Now, as I said, as we've done hundreds of courses around the country with thousands of volunteers, and most of the volunteers would be horrified to think that you could actually put that sort of criteria on club entrances. But I mean, one of the things that so volunteer, well, certainly the leaders of clubs need to understand is that they decide what sort of behaviour happens at their club, and therefore the role that people have. And so how is it received when you say to the members, the new parents, and we'll talk about the induction process in detail in a tick, but how is that received, and when there are inevitably issues, how do you deal with those issues? But first of all, how is it received?
And I must note that I am just talking about our club at Fairhaven.
Yeah, that's fine.
A lot of clubs don't actually run that good policy through their club. I think most parents understand or have a knowledge of the inherent risks of being at the ocean, which is why they've got their kids actually down there doing the program. Now, there's a set of guidelines that are delivered from Surf Life Saving Australia on what is best practice for running, actually running the NIPA programs. Now, in that, from a safety perspective, you know, we're looking at, you know, we need one qualified bronze person for every five kids who are in the water at any one time. You know, we need someone who can do a risk audit on the beach every day and monitor it. We need someone who's going to oversee all the water safety side of things. We need a ratio of one age group manager to every 20 kids. And unless, you know, we've really sold, I suppose, on empowering the parents to take responsibility of their kids, and then building the programs that actually, as I was saying, engage the parents to be part of it as well. And, you know, probably every year we get a few parents who are thinking that they're arriving at a program where they're going to pay the money for their child to be involved in the program. They're going to drop them off, and then they're going to go back to their holiday house and do whatever. And again, you know, the way Surf Life Saving Australia structured the NIPA program, you know, the parents, you know, if they're going to become members and be family members and stuff, they've got to have a working with children's certificate before they can be part of the program as well. So it means they've already bought into the whole thing because they've had to go through to the process of doing the working with children. And there's really, you know, once you actually explain why you're doing what you're doing, and that the requirement is, you know, all that parent engagement to be able to deliver on it, you know, there's really not too many parents that balk at it. And certainly once they come down a couple of times and, you know, working on that inclusiveness and making people welcome, and, you know, we have, you know, senior members of the club who specifically just walk around on the beach on the days and welcome people and introduce themselves to people. And, you know, I've, you know, been in positions father-in-law had a box at the footy for 20 years. And, you know, they made a few changes. The cost went up, as they do and whatever. And he decided to let it go. And I said to him, why did you let it go, that box, after all those years? And he said, in all those years, no one from the committee at that AFL club came up and thanked him for his contribution. You know, and so so we work on that culture of inclusiveness, welcomeness, making, you know, it's quite daunting to turn up at a surf club on your first day with little kids. And I still vividly remember taking my own children down there on the first day, and an older member of that club who became, you know, a lifelong friend, welcoming me into the club and showing me around and just being, you know, absolutely friendly and inclusive. And, you know, I genuinely believe, you know, that's the formula. You know, we tap into the parents' skill sets. You know, I remember last season, you know, we just trying to put on a coffee for the parents and at the end of the nipper session, and a parent came out to me and saying, you know, I'm a world-class barista. Do you need a hand? I can provide you a machine. I'll come in and teach the kids there who were making the coffee to the parents. You know, it's that sort of thing. Or, you know, we were after a plaque and a parent sort of said, well, actually, I've got a business that I deal with plaques. You know, I can sort that sort of thing out for you. And it's really just got to be that engagement. And, you know, we've, you know, taken it, you know, lots of different steps. You know, while we're running a NIPA program, we acknowledge that, you know, not all the kids are sporting and athletic. We do a music night where the kids are invited to come up and we invite the parents. You know, we've got a lot of musician parents who'll come along and play, encourage the kids to be part of that. So all of a sudden you're getting those kids that, you know, feel like they're not winning on the beach. They know that we've got the music night coming up and two or three of the kids have stayed at someone's place and they've worked on a song and they're going to play on the music night. And then we have the, you know, the Nipper disco where, you know, we structure it around the age groups and all the kids come in. The parents have to be there and the parents, you know, have a social function, you know, upstairs at the time where the kids are downstairs, you know, having a bit of a boogie. And again, it's that, you know, welcomeness and inclusiveness and, you know, having people feel comfortable to come into the club.
Yeah, wow. I mean, you're setting the culture for the rest of their journey, aren't you, right from that day one. I just want, before we move on to really that induction process, which really interests me a lot, one of the other feedbacks we get from clubs is that the profile of their membership is changing, as is the Australian population is changing, and there's now a lot of communities of people from countries around the world where volunteering isn't part of that, the way of life in those those different communities. And we're now seeing kids and adults now joining our sports clubs, and often sometimes clubs are having a challenge trying to encourage those newer communities and newer members about how Australian sporting clubs work, which is off the back of the volunteer. Are you seeing that in life saving, or is it just the normal process just picks everybody up and sets the same expectation and dealing with it the same?
Well, Life Saving Victoria has a multicultural department here, which taps into a lot of the life saving clubs. So they're out there finding those communities who are, you know, trying to integrate into an Australian way of life.
Yeah.
That they might not have any swimming capability whatsoever or water safety.
Yes.
And then the department here will run programs through the life saving clubs, and the life saving clubs will contribute to those programs with the idea that of being able to keep those kids and then put them on the life saving pathway, if you like, where they, you know, learn water safety, you know, get an award, you know, a surf rescue certificate, and then stay in and get a bronze medallion, and then, you know, there's a plethora of other awards that, you know, we use to attract kids, or in fact to then direct them into the sporting side of things.
Yes.
So we do that both with from an ocean perspective and also a pool lifeguard perspective. So, you know, to the point now where we've got some fantastic success stories where we've taken, you know, refugees who, with no capability of ocean or understanding, and then bringing them through the system to employment. From again, if I just use my club at Fairhaven as an example, Lifesaving Victoria, the cultural and linguistically department diversity. We'll try and get my acronyms right here.
Yeah.
They've run a camp down in one of the coastal holiday camps, and you know they've contacted the club and said, you know, any chance we can use your facilities? And we said, yeah, look, absolutely, you're welcome to use it. Use our facilities, and then we use the teaching opportunity for the, you know, in this sort of case, would probably the 16 to 20 year olds to come in, and as part of their development in teaching and you know, working with people who don't have that culture and that swimming capability, becomes part of their development to help out in their leadership skills and those sorts of things. So there's some great pathways that have been established, you know, in the life-saving movement.
Yeah, unquestionably. And it's interesting, just while you were speaking, and I'm still getting my mind around the compulsion side of it and how we can incorporate that into our training sessions, but we had Mark Williamson from the Lawn Life-Saving Club a couple of weeks ago talking about peer-to-pub.
Yeah, I know.
And he was saying that you can't be a member at Lawn unless you're prepared to volunteer on that the peer-to-pub weekend. So,
yeah. In actual fact, just on that, I actually spoke to a parent the other day who just enrolled their child in the Fairhaven program because we're sister clubs.
Yes.
And one of the reasons was the kid was a great swimmer, and if he did his bronze medal at Lawn, he wasn't going to be able to compete. So I can...
In the peer-to-pub, you know,
Yeah, I can... certainly see that. And certainly with, you know, where life-saving is different from a sporting perspective is that you can't just turn up and say, I want to be an Ironman competitor, because to be able to do the sport, you have to have done the community service. So there's a minimum number of hours that you have had to spend patrolling on the beach to be able to partake in the sport. And it's not just the minimum number of hours patrolling on the beach, it's the fact that you've retrained yourself every year to be able to do your life saving, which again is a commitment. You've actually had to, you know, get a bronze medallion or whatever, which again, you know, is another big commitment. But it's sort of, and it certainly stands to me when I've again looked across other sports, you know, most other sports, you know, pay your money and join the club and partake in it. For a life-saving sport, it only comes after you're prepared to do the patrol hours. And that's for the most elite Ironmen in Australia. You know, that they still go down like Joe Bloggs and stand down on the beach between the flags for, you know, 16 hours, I think, is roughly the minimum in Victoria, so that they can actually then go and compete in the championships.
Yeah, and I don't think that fact should be overlooked or just said, oh, that's idiosyncratic to the sport, because I think it's all a part of that. As people are coming into the sport, you set the expectations about what the behaviour is going to be while you're in the sport. And that's one of the things that we talk so often about is that deciding the behaviours that you want within your sport. And that I think the number one behaviour that any sport wants, and certainly most aspire to, is that culture of volunteering. Now, I just want to, rather than talk theory, take me through the journey. I've got three daughters, so I'm a parent of a girl who says I want to be a nipper, or I've decided she wants to be a nipper, which I very much did because of that life-saving life insurance type concept. I take my daughter down to the club for the very first time. Take me through that experience or that induction process that takes me from that very apprehensive parent through to an engaged person that are quite happy and willing to walk down the beach and walk into the club rooms and feel like they belong.
Yep. There's sort of almost two streams there. One is, and again, this is where Victoria, again, is unique nationally, in that Victoria is amalgamation of Royal Life Saving Victoria and Surf Life Saving Victoria.
Yes.
So whereas the other states, they're separate bodies, but in Victoria they're the same. So we have the what were historically the Royal Life Saving Clubs located around the bay, and then we have the Surf Life Saving Clubs, which are outside the bay on both sides. Usually the NIPA programs, if you were turning up to a bay club, are going to be different to the what would be the ocean-facing club. So,
yes.
But if you turned up to a bay club, they have it might be, one session a week for December, January, February with a bit of time off. So whereas the coastal visitor clubs, if you like, where the tourists are, generally run an intensive program for, somewhere between 10 and 12 sessions and then move on to, if there's competition, move into the competition area. So yeah. If you've turned up with your daughter down there, there may have been an open day, first of all, before, so that you'd already found out some information about it and taken that away. The surf life saving system is largely geared to so clubs don't have to pay administrators. So right from the start, the responsibility goes to you. So when you decide you and your daughter are going to be members, you need to sign up to the club, and both of you would sign up separately. So you're effectively two different members, and then that's through a system called Life Saving Online.
Mm.
And then you manage your membership from there. So you pay your membership, but you if you've got awards, you can see them. If you've done patrol hours, you can see them. You can see that your daughter's, registered into NIPAs and she's right the right age group. And then you're going to see, right, she's over 8 years of age. Therefore, from a risk mitigation side of things, she has to have done a swimming proficiency if she's going down to do NIPAs, because NIPAs isn't about teaching kids how to swim.
No.
So it's water awareness and ocean water familiarity and that sort of stuff, but it's not a swimming course. So to be part of the program, if she, from under eight upwards, she needs to have a signed proficiency form signed off by a lifeguard at pool, effectively, or a swimming instructor or something like that. So when you take your daughter down to the club on the first day to register for NIPAs, you've got a swimming proficiency form, which already is a risk mitigation part, that your daughter can now go in the water if there's the right supervision ratio. Now, depending on the size of the program and how the club runs it, and again, I'll speak from my experience, as a parent turning up, well, this would have happened before we actually turned up in the case of our club, but, where can you help us out? We need helpers in this range of areas, not unlike Little Athletics. I did Little Athletics with my kids for a lot of years, and that's very labour-intensive on parents.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you would then sign up for some sort of duty that you would do. And the administrators of the club, again, would be managing all those, safety ratios and the training of the people who are training your kids and those sorts of things. And what you would find, again, if it was our club, you would have already been pointed to an online induction process, which is, again, something Life Saving Victoria runs, because you're automatically a member of Life Saving Victoria and Surf Life Saving Australia, the two state and national body.
Yeah.
So you get a general induction across Life Saving Victoria. You do that online. You only have to complete that once. And then the club would induct you into the club. Now, what we do on the first day of NIPAs, or the second day of NIPAs, is when the kids all go off to start their programs, we invite any new mums and dads who are around to hang around, and then we have a senior person of the club walk them through the club, explain the history, show them where all the, the bathrooms and gear storage and first aid and, all those mandatory sort of induction type things are. And then And we explain the culture of the club, and you know, we've got a very firm culture of the club where it's really geared around leave. You know, we've got a big percentage of people from the city. Leave your egos and your city thoughts in the city. When you come down across the threshold in our club, it's blue water mind. You know, you walk into our club, you see the ocean. Don't bring your ego. Don't bring, you know, come in with a fresh mind. It is the culture of our club. And, you know, we have a lot of white-collar workers, blue-collar workers, you know, a really great mishmash of people who manage to come down and get on fabulously well and make lifelong friendships there, you know, over a long period of time. So anyway, so we're working on that, making the parents welcome, making sure that, you know, they, as I said, they meet a friend. Hopefully they don't go for a sleepover, but they meet a friend, you know, effectively on that first day or the second day. They've got a familiar face. And then, you know, they then usually, we need them hanging around in the general vicinity of their children in case the child needs something or whatnot. So it means the parents are gathered around the children, and the parents then intermingle and start to talk and, you know, form friendships while the kids are doing exactly the same thing, you know, doing, playing games and learning water safety. And you know, that's not... I was fortunate enough from a work perspective to actually go and look at all the different programs around the state and pick up little, you know, good little bits from each of the clubs and say, right, well, I'm going to come back and embed that into the Fairhaven way we do things. And, you know, and the program's just, you know, grown. You know, this year, unfortunately, we've actually had to close NIPA registrations as of 30th of November.
Wow. 2 months before.
For the first time, we've had to close it now. That is because, not because we don't want other kids to come, but we need from the 30th of November to the 20th of December to make sure that we're actually meeting all our requirements to run a safe program for those kids. And again, that's making sure that we've got enough water safety and coaches and, you know, all those things. We need that time to get it in, to get everything in place. Mm. The other thing which I'll mention too is we put a lot of emphasis on the kids who have come back who are doing the award. So the kids who are from, say, 14 to 17 who are coming back and doing their bronze medallion and those sorts of things, to also to come back and drop back and help out in the NIPA programs, because the NIPAs sort of look up to those older kids who think it's quite fun to come back down and help the NIPAs and remember when they were a NIPA. And again, it just creates more volunteers in that space, you know, helping the kids.
So it becomes self-fulfilling.
Now,
just in the couple of minutes, I mean, Paul, I could listen to you all day. I mean, what you're saying and sharing the insights to the your clubs is just phenomenally valuable to other sports and other clubs and to us. But this week, first week of December, is also Water Safety Week. And I think it's really important to get across that message of water safety, because my family is heavily involved in Learn to Swim schools, so water safety is all day, every day, part of our dinner table conversation almost. So, but from Life Saving Victoria's sort of perspective, what does the week mean for water safety and getting that safety message out to the community?
So what happens this week, we're really using all the aquatic agencies, largely the sport and rec agencies, to help deliver the message. So the Plate Safe by the Water campaign is something that's that the government has funded now for about 15 years. And Water Safety Week's about getting the message across, from whether it be aquatic facilities or Yachting Victoria or surfing or Kids Safe or, you know, boating. It's really wherever water is. This year, the drowning prevention data is showing us that inland waterways is an emerging area of problems. And one of the key things in the drowning statistics is that 30% of people who drown did didn't intend to go swimming. So it slips, trips, and falls into water, and then not having the capability to save yourself. Wow. So again, it becomes then, you know, you go back and look at that and have a think about it, and you know, swimming capability of children leaving school. You know, where are we at with that? Well, you know, there's just been some research released that 60% of children leaving primary school can't swim 50 metres or float for 2 minutes.
Wow.
And again, you know, we spoke about the multicultural angle on that before, and
yes,
you know, yeah, that's certainly, you know, going to contribute to what goes on. But, you know, not having swimming lessons as a mandatory part of the school curriculum, you know, is certainly, you know, influencing, you know, at the end of the chain, you know, drowning. So we've got a bit of an emphasis on that. The other thing is life jackets. Is a big push there. We had 7 people drown in boating incidents last. I think there was 10 who drowned, but 7 who didn't have a life jacket or a correctly fitting life jacket on. Which, given that it's actually against the law to not have one, you know, these days, it's a pretty damning statistic. Alcohol around water, again, has raised a tad of about a quarter of all drowning deaths, alcohol-related, and, you know, quite elevated alcohol levels. And then from the age-specific brackets, you know, the 0 to 4 continues to be a... you know, a real danger area with the supervision of kids in backyard swimming pools and in the home environments. And then we've had a big surge in the 15 to 24 year bracket, mainly young males, you know, which again is a concern. And the other one is the over 60s. There's been a significant increase in the drowning of people over 60 years of age. So while we're trying to encourage people to be in the water and, you know, for much longer periods of their life and their health and fitness benefits, you know, they also need to take into consideration, you know, the medical side of it and the fact that a lot of them just forget that they're not as capable as what they used to be. So they'll turn up at the beach at Gunnamatta and have their feet swept out from underneath them, and not they're forgotten, if you like, the severity of what ocean currents, you know, can actually be like.
Oh, absolutely.
So plenty happening this week. We've had we had an inland launch at Bendigo. We've got a Fed Square event in the city of Melbourne on Wednesday, I think, and then we've got an over 60s program with some yachting programs. Plenty on, which is great.
Well, Paul, thank you so much for sharing that all with us today. I mean, it's some of the most, I'm not sure whether it'll come across to you as you kind of live and breathe it all the time, but some of the most powerful information that we've had come on the show has come out of today's sessions. So thank you very much for that. Now, if I'm a parent who has listened to your story and wants to get their kids involved or become involved in a life-saving club, where do they go to get the information about life-saving within Victoria?
So the Life-Saving Victoria website has a link through to all the clubs in the state. You can click on that and fill in your details, and that goes directly to the specific club, so there's a club that you're particularly interested in. The details will go to there, and then the club will contact you, hopefully, if it's a diligent club. And or most clubs have a website that you can look up their website and find out the information, you know, about what's going on. And, you know, the Lifesaving Victoria's got over 30,000 members, so it's a fairly, you know, sophisticated back end that runs at Lifesaving Victoria to try and you know, support 30,000 members.
Wow. So that's www.lifesavingvictoria.com.au. Paul Shannon, Lifesaving Victoria General Manager, Government and Industry Relations, thank you very much for spending a good half an hour of your time with us in one of the busiest weeks of the year, the Water Safety Week. Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure.
You're listening to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Jonah Veller and Steve Pallas. If you've missed a couple of our episodes, why not visit our website at www.sportscommunity.com.au And there you'll find all our previous podcasts that you can download. And while you're there, give us a review so you can help spread the news about Sports Community and its services to the grassroots sports clubs. Okay, we come to the end of the podcast. We hope you've enjoyed it. We hope you've enjoyed all the guests that we brought to you and all the content that we brought to you, the best from the field, from the world of grassroots sports. So on behalf of myself, Jonah Veller and Steve Pallas, we look forward to talking to you again next week when we bring you sportscommunity.com.au podcast.